Hey there, hi there, ho there, everyone, and welcome to the newest episode of Welcome to the New You, a podcast produced, edited, and published by the Gainesville Community Counseling Center. We are a 501c3 mental health agency operating on the east side of Gainesville, located at 1001 Northeast 16th Avenue, Gainesville, Florida 32601. You can find us on the interwebs at www.gainesvillecounselingcenter.com, or you can give us a call at 352-448-9120. We offer individual, group, couples, and family therapy for a variety of issues. We currently have groups going for anger management, for porn and sex addiction, as well as groups for LGBTQIA adolescents and college students. So if you're interested in any of those, give us a call. Here at the center, we try to not turn anyone away, so we do have some scholarship funds available. So if finances are an issue, please don't let that stop you from calling us at 352-448-9120. We offer you this podcast because we think mental health is important. That's why we do what we do. But it's a way for us to get information out about the community, things that are going on, and give you some tips on how to manage your own situations that you may be facing in your family or individual or relationships. So we talk about depression, anxiety. We talk about all sorts of mental health issues. My favorite subject is, anybody?
Sex.
So we talk about S-E-X, although in today's political climate, I don't think I'm really allowed to say sex. I think I have to spell it out, S-E-X, before I get audited or silenced by the state government. Anyway, that's a whole nother issue.
I mean, today's podcast is on the product of sex.
Well, that's true. You have to have, well, you don't really have to have sex for kids these days. You can, anyway, there are other ways. Anyway. So today's topic is parent-child relationships, and I'm joined on the podcast by Gina Romblad. Hello, Gina.
Hi, how are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
Okay.
It's 10 o'clock in the morning. Are you a morning person?
No.
Oh, thank God. Morning people irritate me. So Gina is one of our therapists here. She is a licensed clinical social worker.
Indeed.
And she does individual and couples and runs our anger management group. Mm-hmm. And she's always looking for new people to join the group. So that one in particular, give us a call. So Gina, tell us a little bit about you. It's been a while since you've been on the podcast. So tell us a little bit about your approach to therapy and issues that you tend to work on.
Okay. Let's see. I got my master's and bachelor's and all that in Connecticut, and then moved here shortly after that. Like a day after I finished my final internship. And then I did work at Meridian for 8 years, doing a lot of work with families who have DCF or partnership cases. Mm-hmm. And then ran an IOP for addictions for 3 years before I came here. And worked a lot in, individuals and groups before that. But then, now I'm doing EMDR and couples therapy and branching out. It's been great.
Fantastic. And she's getting very involved in learning about dissociative identity disorder.
Oh, yes.
Right? So that's going to be your newest thing that you study?
Yeah, it's super interesting.
Yeah, so I'll send everybody with DID to you and let you be the expert on that. So one of the things we try and do each and every episode of the podcast is talk about mindfulness. Mindfulness is one of the ways that we teach around here to begin to address some of the initial reactions that people have. And Gina, I know you do a lot of mindfulness mm-hmm. activities. So last time you shared with us the beach scene, right? And kind of the waves coming in. And you forgot, I remembered.
That's my favorite one that I use with a lot of people.
Well, you can't use that one again today. So you have to come up with another one. Do you have another one?
The one that comes to mind is called Driving with a Monk.
A monk?
A monk.
Like a religious monk?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So he's a pretend monk. He's friendly. There's a picture of him in the book that I use for a lot of these mindfulness visualization exercises that I find awesome. So essentially the premise of it, I don't have the whole script memorized, but is that when you're driving, a lot of people have anxiety when they're driving about what could happen and car accidents and things like that. And so the idea of driving with this calming monk who's just sitting in your passenger seat is just this calming presence for you, to kind of just encourage you to just breathe and take your time and do one thing at a time and let go of some of that anxiety. I found has been helpful.
Could they replace the monk with a trusted friend or family member?
Absolutely.
Or especially a pet?
Yes. Yeah, any imaginary calming person. The example of, you know, this monk is in the book, but any positive person, comforting entity for you is totally fine.
Perfect. Perfect. And they can use that in the car, but I suppose they could also use that in school and classes and anywhere they are. Just pretend that whoever it is sitting next to them, kind of guiding them and motivating them to focus on their breath and release some of that anxiousness.
Yeah, provide some comfort for the person. Like, you know, they're not alone and they're not, you know.
Good. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So today's topic is parent-child relationships. And you have a child.
I do. She's 4.
Oh, my gosh. I have 3 children, theoretically, from what I'm told.
Theoretically.
Yeah.
We never got testing done.
I did not say that. Anyway, your mother would kill you for saying that on the podcast.
We say it all the time.
Oh, well, okay. All right. Well, for the record, I did not say that. Anyway, so parent-child relationships. So why, from your perspective, why is the parent-child relationship so important in our lives?
I think it's important for many reasons. Having that connection with your child is, I think, helps improve behavior, helps with, you know, positive connections for the parents and for the child, and to have that parent be a safe space to come and talk about what's ever going on. I feel like I talk to a lot of people that, you know, talking to mom or dad is not their safe space, especially, you know, a lot of the children that I've worked with. You know, I'd rather talk to a friend, or I'd rather, you know. And so I think having that bond with your child, you know, and having that be just an open thing, like, even if you did something wrong, you can still come to me. I'm not gonna be, you know, we may have to lose a consequence or sure. lose a privilege or something, but you know, we'll always be there to talk to you, and whatever you have to talk to us about is a safe thing. And
yeah.
I think that's so important.
Yeah. So at the root of that is that idea of attachment and the attachment styles, and depending on which researcher and article you're reading, there are multiple ways of kind of envisioning attachment styles, but, you know, you get secure attachment, avoidant attachment, anxious avoidant is sometimes in there. Then there's avoidant attachment. And so the idea is that the relationship with our primary caregivers, sometimes our parents, sometimes it ends up being a caregiver of some sort, or a foster parent or something like that. But those early relationships that children form to learn how to identify who is safe and who isn't is important.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm reminded of Murray Bowen. Right, Bowen Systems, and, you know, kind of his description of his attachment style with his parents, and that's kind of how that model began. And what he highlighted was that the notion of creating this safe space, this home base for your child, is very important, so that they know that it's okay to be close to you, they can trust you.
Yeah.
And it starts really in the womb, right? And so how parents treat themselves and the body in during that 9 month period does have an impact in part on how a child learns to be safe, as long as their needs are getting met inside the womb, right? Through good nutrition, medication, even now, I mean, back in the day, we didn't have all these things where we would talk into the stomach and all this other stuff, but you know, the new age folks, you know, now they do that and they'll have dad particularly speak to the child in the womb. And all of that's about creating this secure attachment. So when you think of secure attachment, what would that look like for somebody to know that they have a secure attachment with their parent or their child?
It's a good question. I think of knowing just, I think it just comes back for me to that safe space, but knowing that, you know, I think it starts, you know, like in infancy, you know, knowing this person is going to take care of me and they've been there for me. They're going to meet my needs. They're making healthy choices for themselves and modeling those choices for me. And, you know, if you look at like attachment parenting, there's so many different levels of the, you know, that kind of thing. But I think, you know, knowing, it brings me back to all of these cases that I've seen when parents have had DCF involvement, especially with a substance use disorder. It makes a stark difference between parents that are bonded with their child, make those healthy choices, and have that awareness of themselves, you know, making sure that they're not, you know, say, you know, using a substance while they're pregnant, or, you know, making sure that they make that child their first priority.
Right.
And that child knowing that, it makes such a difference. And, you know, having seen, you know, kids or mom or dad is, you know, choosing something else over them makes a huge impact on that kid. And, you know, it causes a lot of trauma. So I think it's so important to make sure that, you know, like for my child, you know, she, you know, we know that she's our first priority no matter what. And that having that connection with your kid just makes, you know, especially early on,
right,
has these lifelong effects as far as trust and being able to have hope.
Right.
You know, I happen to, as far as theories go, I'm an Erickson therapist, if you will.
What does that mean?
Well, Erik Erikson was a theorist who came up with the stages of life development. And the first one, for example, for each stage, you gain an ego strength. So you have like this, you know, trust versus mistrust in infancy. And so knowing that mom or dad is going to be there.
Right.
Knowing that I'm going to be fed and I'm going to be picked up if I need, you know, when I'm crying or whatever. And they trust, you know, and they gain this ego strength of hope.
Right.
That I'm going to be taken care of and I have that attachment to mom and dad. And
right.
I'm going to be okay. And I think that, you know, makes such a difference even, you know, just starting at that age, you know, and then you move on to autonomy and all that stuff. But knowing, okay, I can venture here, but mom and dad are still there.
Yeah.
And they still, you know, no matter what, I'm their priority and they're going to be here to catch me if I fall. I think it makes just a drastic difference for kids.
It does. And I need to go back and correct it. Murray Bowen developed systems theory, not attachment theory. It's John Bowlby who did. Sorry about that. That hit me like, that's the wrong name, I think. Anyway, but you're right. It's that security and that safety that's created that does start in womb, but is kind of heightened post-birth all the way through even our adult relationships. So one of the first things that happens when a birth occurs, you know, they wipe off the baby, do whatever they do, because That's just gross.
Clean it up. Clean it up. Clean it up. Mom's even.
Yeah, and then they put the baby on mom's chest.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they do that?
First off, to regulate the baby's body temperature. Mm-hmm. And to create that bond with mom. And to give the baby that sense of peace and to hear mom's voice like they heard in the womb. And mm-hmm. to know that, you know, okay, this I'm here. I'm with that person that I've been with since I've been, you know, developing, and
right.
to create that immediate attachment.
Yeah. Well, and there's, you know, the physiological effects also besides the calming mm-hmm. are that it immediately begins enhances the neuron development mm-hmm. for the child, right? And so there's this condition known as reactive attachment disorder, which has been traced back to a lack of connection, physical connection between the child, young children in particular, and their caregivers. And so we see that a lot in kids who are in NICU units for mm-hmm. an extended period of time, which is why now they begin to allow parents to hold the baby, because the end result is the neurons, they don't cease development entirely, but they slow development. And then that creates for the child this, what they'll describe later on in life as kind of this pins and needles feeling when somebody touches their skin. And so I was working with one couple in their mid-30s, and mm-hmm. They came to me because the husband had sexual issues, what he described as performance issues.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was talking to him, he would describe the physical sensation of being touched anywhere on his body. And it was like, it was so painful, physically painful for him. And so when we did our check back into, you know, what was life like growing up, mm-hmm. I said, well, did you by any chance, were you a preemie? Were you in NICU?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, yeah, for like 6 to 8 weeks. And then I was able to say, well, this is something that happens, and give him some additional tools to use to help soothe that feeling and help them differentiate between light touch and you know, more strong touch, right? Mm-hmm. Because the light touch for him would send him off, but being grabbed was not something that bothered him. But it all started in that early phase. So things that parents can do to kind of enhance the attachment, what are some of those things that parents can do to really enhance and develop the sense of a secure attachment?
I think it's important to really have quality time where that child knows that, you know, all of your attention is on them during that time.
Mm-hmm.
I know for my kiddo, she's, you know, if she doesn't spend time with one of us for a certain amount, you know, like just, you know, let's go to the park, let's do this thing, let's go to the library together. Uh-huh. And having like a, you know, also like a bedtime kind of ritual, if you will, or schedule of, okay, let's read together. Mm-hmm. Let's, you know, spend this time and talk about what happened,
mm-hmm.
you know. If we forget at the end of the day, our daughter will come into our room and say, we forgot to do days, and we have to guess what the other one did that day, or
yeah.
even if we spent the entire day together. And that's a really important thing for her to have that.
Well, the fact that she can come in and say, hey, we forgot this,
mm-hmm.
and the response isn't, well, you know, we'll skip it, but, oh, you're right, we did.
Yeah.
Right. Even that is an act of enhancing that sense of secure attachment.
Yeah, and even like one morning we woke up and she was in the middle of our bed and we were just like, oh, you just had it. We didn't even wake up. She just came and knew she could lay in our bed if she was scared, even if we hadn't, for some reason, didn't wake up right away, which mm-hmm. we usually do. But, you know, I think having, you know, mom and dad are going to be there if I'm scared. You know, I have my kid dreams about nightmares about monsters or what have you. That,
yeah.
You know, and with having a super active imagination, as most 4-year-olds do, you know, like active. It's okay, I know that I can trust them and I can come, and I think it makes a big difference.
It does. And but sometimes, you know, we have you know, we've seen families where, you know, one child or multiple children may have medical issues, developmental issues, mm-hmm. ADHD, maybe experiencing some sort of mental health issue, and the challenge that creates within the family, the anxiety that naturally comes as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking about parents in particular who have a highly reactive child that needs a lot of attention, a lot of guidance, maybe strong-willed. And how do you go about maintaining that attachment in a way which is healthy can be difficult, right? So if I have a child who has really bad ADHD and maybe a touch of, you know, oppositional defiance that goes along with it, as a parent, I might become frustrated. I might become angry. And those are normal feelings, normal reactions.
Mm-hmm.
And the challenge then becomes, if I know I have a child like that, what modifications do I need to make for myself so that my child knows that they're still safe, even though they're having these moments or episodes?
Mm-hmm.
So what would you suggest to a parent who does have a child who's not perfect, who does have some challenges or pose some challenges, or maybe just strong-willed? They're just right, and that's not a bad thing, but you know, it certainly for some parents comes off as they're questioning my authority. How can a parent regulate themselves so that they can stay in a healthy place while also having appropriate boundaries, you know, for the child and their behaviors?
I found, like, you know, when I get frustrated, it's helpful to know where my limits are and call on my husband and say, like, hey, can you take her for a little bit? I need a self-care moment.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting to that point where I don't, you know, I don't want to take out frustration on her because I'm getting overwhelmed, and he'll jump in and take over for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that helps a lot in terms of, you know, regulating my own emotions. So she still sees that I'm, you know, mom and dad are authority figures, and, you know, I think having, you know, using things like DBT and therapy can be really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also found, making sure that, like, if the child is in daycare or has other caregivers, to see what's working at the school or with that other caregiver.
Right.
For us, like, when, you know, she would have a certain behavior that wasn't, you know, being bossy, or she's doing certain things that are not desirable behaviors, finding what works at the school, mm-hmm. and then modeling that same intervention at home, I think makes a big difference.
Sure.
And there are also some great books from Scholastic that we've found. One of them I know is called My Words Roar.
Oh.
And there's another one, I'll have to let you guys know what it was called. That kind of refers to what's appropriate and not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do I, you know, scream about bathroom stuff when mom and dad are having a meeting? Or
right.
Do I, you know, what's appropriate to, you know, in a classroom setting, or, you know, if we're on a bus or wherever we are, you know, how do I let my emotions be known and be able to communicate with mom and dad there's something going on with me?
Mm-hmm.
Without being inappropriate, you
right.
know, waiting my turn and
right.
Learning, you know, emotion regulation that way.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that we really like at home is, I think it's called Zara's Big Messy Day That Turned Out Okay. And she has all of these big emotions, like every kid or adult does. And, you know, her brother knocks her tower over, mm-hmm. and a girl at school is mean to her and she doesn't know what to do and she gets really, you know, upset.
Right.
And her mom teaches her this little mindfulness trick in the book, which I thought was really cool, of breathing in, like you're smelling a bouquet of flowers that's under your nose, and then, you know, blowing out birthday candles.
Mm.
And there's this cool image in there of her for doing that. And then she's able to manage these things doing what that, you know, using what her mom taught her.
Right.
And was able to better manage her emotions that way. So I think teaching some of these things to kids on their age level, I think, is really important and helpful.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's also important to realize that it's not just something we focus on in early life, right? It's something that we focus on throughout their growth period.
Oh, yeah, and that mom and dad aren't perfect either.
Right.
You know, that we're still working and we're, you know, learning with that child and mm-hmm. how to best help them.
Yeah. And it's, you know, there's this idea that I often have difficulty with. The notion that the child is the center of the universe, to me, can be a challenging thing for parents, because if that's true, then what about the parental unit? What about the parental relationship? If the child is the center, then that naturally creates kind of an obstacle, barrier between that parental unit. And so what I encourage parents to remember is that the parental dyad, having that secure, stable relationship there, has as much impact on the child as your relationship with the child, if not more, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. If the child knows that mom and dad are always there, even though they're not getting along, they're always there, it's safe, that allows them to then self-regulate. So if mom and dad are having a fight, the natural reaction isn't, oh my god, they're done. It's they'll get over it.
Yeah. And I think being open to talking with, you know, your kids about, yeah, mom and dad sometimes, you know, will disagree about things, but that's, you know, this is how we talk about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, modeling that, you know, we're always working at, you know, being in a relationship with somebody is a constant, you know, process of learning how to communicate most effectively with that person. And you know, knowing, yeah, we're still here, we're not breaking up, we're, you know, we just disagreed about something, and mm-hmm. this is how we handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that's a big attachment thing too. I'm not going to be abandoned by mom and dad. And
right. And, you know, there's this notion that, you know, whatever attachment style you develop as a child, you're stuck with that attachment style for life. What do you think about that?
I don't know off the top of my head. I think it's important, you know, when you having appropriate attachment as a kid,
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, a lot of those times when it doesn't work the way it's supposed to, you know, I've seen there to be some level of trauma occurring.
Sure.
And then that, you know, continues into later in life where they have, you know, difficulty with connection and relationships. And in future, you know, that can be a romantic relationship or not, but difficulty connecting with other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's also helpful to have not only just mom and dad be, you know, a stable, you know, but any caregiver.
Sure.
You know, having, it's made a big impact that we love my daughter's, you know, daycare. They're also really positive role models for healthy relationships between mm-hmm. people. And I think that also, you know, can make a big difference of,
sure.
you know, how other relationships, you know, function outside of, you know, this is my teacher's child and,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I think it promotes healthy communication and connection to
yeah.
another person's life.
Yeah. I think one of the things that happens, you know, is that we don't focus a lot on attachment, you know, in therapy directly but a lot of folks don't. And helping folks to understand that the way they're attaching to their current partner or experiencing that attachment is more the result often of the experiences they're bringing into it.
Yeah.
Right. Like you're mm-hmm. not reacting to your partner now. Well, you may be, but it's influenced significantly by the relationship that you just get out of, or he reminds you, or she reminds you, or they remind you of your mother.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And so, you know, finding ways to help them understand that I don't have to continue with those. Right. I mean, that's whole, for me, one of the whole goals of therapy is to help folks understand that just because this was my attachment style back then doesn't mean that I can't learn something new. It requires a lot of vulnerability and a lot of trust.
Yeah.
It's scary, but it can be done. And you're absolutely right. Those early experiences, if they're not handled well, or even dating experiences or early relationships, they create relational trauma. Now, are those trauma with a capital T? No. But mm-hmm. they are still traumatic in nature and kind of heighten that anxiety that we feel as we enter into a new relationship, right? So, you know, around here, we talk a lot about Gottman. We talk a lot about trauma. And I think the beauty of the Gottman method is that it addresses in sometimes direct, sometimes indirectly, mm-hmm. the attachment piece that couples are really struggling with. And I think most of the time, for couples in particular, that's what happens, is I have unresolved attachment issues with my parents, and so that gets brought in. And so through the Gottman method, or emotionally focused therapy for adults, they can learn how to reestablish their connection style, and their partner can learn how to provide that safe space, that safe base, that home base for their partner, which can then be an excellent model for the child. And then you can kind of redevelop that relationship with your child, even as adults.
I've seen a lot of examples where, you know, like mom and dad left, and now I think everybody's going to leave me.
Mm-hmm.
And my, you know, having these fears of abandonment because, you know, I was abandoned as a kid.
Sure.
And knowing that, you know, it's that person may have abandoned me and had their own stuff going on, but this person isn't going to. And having building trust is a big deal.
Yeah. So I was in my porn group, the workbook that we use, there was a story at the beginning of one of the chapters of this therapist who was going and they were on a flight heading to do a presentation somewhere, and they ended up in a middle seat, and in the window seat was an unaccompanied minor who was going to either mom or dad's house. Mm-hmm. Right? They were divorced situation. They were flying to the other parent's house. And during the flight, the child just burst into tears and described the difficulties of feeling the absence of one parent all the time. And it heightened for me the notion that, you know, in today's society, where if you believe the statistics, a 50% divorce rate, you have a good number of kids who are living in divorce situations. And sometimes those situations are pretty nasty.
Yeah.
And mom and dad, rather than focus on the kid, they continue to combat each other.
Yeah.
So in a divorce situation, what are we looking for that would help create a safe, secure attachment, even in the midst of that turmoil? What are some things that parents who are divorcing could do to help that child not feel like they're being abandoned or being used as what I call ping pong between the parents, or used as a tool mm-hmm. in the midst of this divorce? What are some things that parents might be able to do in that situation?
From what I've seen, what's been helpful is making sure that, you know, you can be there as a, you know, a resource, both mom and dad. Like, you can talk to either one of us about what's going on with you, and knowing that, you know, maybe mommy and daddy can't be together right mm-hmm. now because, you know, it's not safe, or it's not a good thing right now, but we both still love you and we're both here for you.
Right.
And knowing that, you know, you can still call mom or dad, you know, if you're at the other house, or, you know, keeping that child's emotions in check, and knowing that, you know, blended families are tricky for kids,
mm-hmm.
and not making that child kind of a go-between in terms of, you know, name calling about the other parent,
right.
or you know, you should tell your father this or anything like that. Knowing, right. like, keeping that stuff out of the kids.
It's not their job.
Right. They don't, and it causes a lot of, you know, oh, it's my fault. And, you know, if I don't do this, this will happen. Or, you know, pinning one parent against the other just totally right. screws with this attachment idea. And making sure that, you know, like, that bond is still there. We both still care about you. We're both completely still here for you. We're just not together right now.
Right, right. And I think it's that intentionality about not talking badly about the other person, as difficult as that may be sometimes.
Yeah.
The child doesn't need to hear that at all. And what that does when you do that is it places that child, whether intentionally or unintentionally, in a position where now they're going to be on heightened alert going to the other person's house. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have this secret that, you know, the other parent thinks this about this parent. And then what do they do with that? And so it heightens that anxiety for the child, which has a negative impact on the attachment.
Mm-hmm.
So for parents, being able to iron your issues out at the parental unit, in that dyad, through your own texts, through your own emails, through your own phone conversations, through your own attorneys, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But keep it out of the kids' area. Let them just be kids.
Yeah.
No matter how much you don't like the other person, that's an adult issue. And kids just need to be kids.
Yeah. And one other thing that I found is important is if you have, say, a visitation situation, or you have, like, you know, you're dropping off or going between one or the other, you know, showing up and still being consistent and being that presence that, you know, sure. you're still there. And, you know, oh, if I go from one to the other, there's not going to be, you know, fight, or there's not going to be any of this, you know, negative stuff, so it's still a positive experience for the child. Okay, you're just going to the other parent's house,
right?
You know, and that it's still okay, it's just different.
Yeah. And you know, for parents it can be a difficult thing, but you know, earlier I said the child's not the center of the universe, but in a divorce the child is the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so from my perspective clinically, all decisions impacting the parental unit, the parental situation, have to be focused on what's best for the child. No buts, no ands, no ifs. At that point, the child does become the center of the universe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that negatively impacts, or well, I should say, the things that positively impact a child in a divorce situation are that calmness, that ability to go to either parent, that knowledge that there is a regular routine, whatever that is, that when I'm supposed to be at mom's going to be there, when I'm at dad's going to be there, or mom and mom, dad and dad, whatever that situation is, that the schedule is followed and maintained.
Yeah.
Even showing up to school events and athletic events,
mm-hmm.
when the child's not in your quote unquote custody, those are important because the child then says, okay, they're here.
Yeah. The other thing that I've seen in a lot of like DCF or situations where parents are splitting up is the difference in discipline,
mm-hmm.
and schedule. And, you know, oh, I can get away with murder at dad's house, but at mom's house, I have to maintain all these rules. And that also causes more trauma.
Sure.
So making sure that, you know, you're keeping that child's system consistent, makes a huge difference.
It does. The one caution I always give if I'm working with a divorced parent,
mm-hmm.
the one caution I always remind them is you can't control what the other person does or doesn't do.
Mm-hmm.
But all you can do is present your concerns and highlight the fact that if I do it this way and you do it that way, it's not about me or you, it's about what impacts the child. What impact does that have on our child?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a much healthier message than you're parenting wrong, or
yeah.
you're just the fun parent and I have to be, right? Because that's the, I think, the dichotomy they get into. And that makes it about me and about you, but where's the child in that conversation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? And so I think that's a big shift. because with divorce comes a lot of emotions, a lot of pain, a lot of hurt. But putting the child at the center in that case is absolutely essential. So that's the one time I go against my rule of child's not the center of the universe.
Yeah. You know?
And the other one is single parents, right? There's a lot of single parents out there.
So hard.
It is hard because oftentimes single parents are working multiple jobs. They don't have the privilege, the luxury of spending an inordinate amount of time with the child, either before school or after school. And then society tends to peg them as absentee parents, latchkey kids, whatever they call them these days. But there's still ways that that single parents can stay attached and offer that secure attachment to their child. It just takes, I think, a lot more effort and a lot more work because the burden's on that one person. And so the exhaustion level tends to be very high, right? Yeah. So how does a single parent manage to keep that attachment?
It's hard. I think in terms of, you know, the schedule and things like that, just making sure you make time with your child a priority. And I think it's tough too when you think about, having your own self-care time and feeling overwhelmed. And I think it brings me back to a couple years ago when my husband was really sick. So I was essentially being a single parent because he was just not able to do any of those things. He had mono and all these things. And I kind of got this taste of what that was like. And I realized that it's okay to ask for help in that. You know, it's okay to, you know, I had a friend who said, you know, if you need somebody to come mow your lawn, I can do that, you know. And to not know that you're not alone in it and seek out help for, you know, your own bonding and to be with other parents. You know, I think one of the best things that I did when I, you know, had my daughter was to link up with other moms and to, you know, or for, you know, for a father, obviously, to, you know, be around other parents that, you know, maybe in a, you know, a similar age group to your child. And, you know, just finding that balance and having, again, keeping that schedule consistent and knowing like, I have to work, you know, I have to be able to provide for us, but, you know, we are not alone and you're still my priority. And I think, you know, knowing that is so important.
I think there's a lot of, guilt involved with a lot of parents of being, having to work so much, especially single parents, and they feel like criticized and blamed from society as a whole, but also from sometimes from their own kids who will say, you're never there for me. And, you know, that hits at the core of the parent because everything they're doing usually is to support the child. But for the child, you know, from their perspective, all they want is you. And so in those moments, it becomes about quality over quantity. Like when I'm home, I got time for you. We're gonna spend time together. Recognize that I can't be at every game, but I will be at every game I can be, and I will check in with you at those after those events. I'm going to show that interest no matter how tired I am, and that can be exhausting as well. But those are some unique ways that you can really manage that attachment in that family unit. And yes, accessing resources and networking with others is very important in that process. And so we can be one of those networks and one of those resources to help them.
Yeah, I think at the time I felt like, I probably should go make an appointment with my therapist, but we don't know what's going on with his health right now. So should I even do that? And, you know, is it worth the copay or whatever it is? And I think, you know, I think it's easy to get bogged down by, you know, mom guilt or what have you, that, you know, like my mental health isn't as important. And, you know, it's not true.
Right.
I think, you know, there's this huge stigma of therapy and, you know, I have to be, you know, I must be screwed up if I have to do this.
Right.
I think it's just good for ongoing well-being.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, it is, if I'm experiencing something, it's going to come out of the family, pure and simple. one way, shape, or form, it's going to come out. So attending to that is important. And sometimes you don't need therapy. Sometimes you just need a good friend to sit with, and a good walk, a good, you know, a good self-care moment to do that. So, but at the end of the day, you know, attachment is important. How I attach to my child, how my child attaches to me. It's not about being the perfect parent. It's about being consistent. And when we mess up, it's okay to say, yeah, I screwed that up. And then you move on.
Yeah.
Right. So, understand that, it is a style of relationship that can be nurtured and changed along the way, but the way in which we develop attachment early on has a big trajectory into the future. And that's why we focus a lot on what happens in those early years. So if you are listening to this and you would like to talk about attachment and discuss ways to attach better to yourself or to your adult partner or to your children, feel free to give us a call at 352-448-9120. Or you can go online at www.gainesvillecounselingcenter.com and you can check out the profiles of our therapists, see which ones are accepting new clients, which ones aren't, and set up an appointment. And again, if finances are an issue, please don't let that stop you. We do have some scholarship funds and some grant money to help cover some of those costs. So thank you for being here, Gina. You've got clients to go in and help and walk with, and I've got admin stuff to deal with. But thank you for being here with us. Thank you all for listening. And again, we are the Gainesville Community Counseling Center, 352-448-9120, GainesvilleCounselingCenter.com.
Mm-hmm.
Peace.